You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Well, hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Moira Mills. What we talk about is education and school choice. I think this is an interesting topic that I think a lot of people have questions about. And Moira's story is unique and interesting. I will say, I am kind of very chatty in this interview. I could feel it while we were doing it. I'm not exactly sure what's going on today, but I was so chatty in this conversation, but I definitely am. Anyway, Moira shares in our conversation. She shares her personal education background as a kid. She also shares openly and very vulnerably how she made the decision she did for her child when it came to education. And I push her on these a little bit. I ask some potentially hot button questions about things including religion, curriculum choice, socialization options, and she shares her personal answers. And you guys, this is a thing that I think is actually pretty courageous, because one of the things that I've experienced and that I've seen myself and in other people is that as a modern day parent, when we go, not just make these decisions, but go public about the decisions for why we do things for our kids, the reality is that there are sometimes many other adults who have strong opinions about the things that we are doing for our children. And so it does take guts and courage to speak up and say, I'm doing this thing that may not be seen mean as being mainstream, but here's why. So I want to thank her for doing that very much. I think you're really going to enjoy this. So let's get to it. Moira Mills, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm super happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat?
I'm so ready.
Let's do it. I start all of my interviews with the same question, which is, what part of the world do you call home?
Well, it's such a good question. The whole eastern half of the United States of America is currently what we call home.
I love it. We're going to talk more about that. I was looking forward to your answer. I almost didn't ask you that question because I knew I have some background that I knew that would be an interesting thing. But Eastern. Okay, I'll come back to that. The topic of the day is schooling, and we're going to get to that in a second. But first, I have one more warm-up question for you. So it's summer. We're recording this in August. I live in the tropics. Last week, we were experiencing some weather phenomenon called like a heat dome or something. I think they make these things up every week. I have no idea. But anyway, this random question is, what is the warmest temperature weather-wise that you remember, like in your living experiences?
So when I was living in LA 15 years ago, I remember it hitting 105.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I remember some 100-plus days when I was a kid. Like, so amazingly, even though Miami is hot and miserable, we don't actually get usually into the hundreds. Also, amazingly, somehow Miami opted out of the heat dome, which I was really surprised by. Like, it just was like, yeah, I know. I don't know how. Like, how does that? It just like stopped. Like, so Northern Florida was experiencing crazy temps, Central Florida, but we were just in our regular misery. So there we go. Anyway, weather is not actually the topic, but we're going to talk about school. And I know from the information you already gave me that after the pandemic, you did what you call beginning to unschool your son. And now you do something called road schooling. I'm going to start with a question about road schooling, because I had not heard of that until I read your submission. I'm really excited to learn what it is. I will admit that I Googled it. And we're going to talk about that. So tell us a little bit about what road schooling means.
It just means homeschooling on the road. So that can be anywhere from unschooling to full-on homeschooling with like a typical curriculum. There's another term, world schooling, which is doing the same thing, but you're traveling the world full-time. So that's what it means.
All right. On the road. That's the reason I was interested to hear what you would say, what part of the world you call home. Okay. So very good. Before we talk about what you're doing with your son for education, I want to back way up and talk about your education so that we can have a perspective, because I think this is really interesting. So that's okay. We're going to talk about you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's do it. You grew up in Alaska, which is why when you said East Coast, my eyes were like, what? Unexpected. That by itself is something that a lot of people might find interesting. What part of Alaska?
So I was on the Kenai Peninsula. So it's where a majority of the population in Alaska lives.
Very interesting. All right. So I think in your bio that you submitted, you shared that you yourself never set foot in a classroom. And I'm super interested about that. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what learning looked like for you as a kid?
Yes. So it really looked very similar to how it looks as an adult. So I would be interested in something and I was available because I had the time to go down that learning path. So whatever that was, I could go explore it. So that meant, this is like pre-YouTube. So it'd be go to the library and get books, find a magazine that talked about it. Talk to people that had experiences, but I was free to be able to follow those like trains of thought as they happened in real time. So it's just like as an adult, if I'm interested about something now, I'll go find a TikTok or a YouTube or Google an article
Yeah.
and go learn about it. So I was just doing exactly the same thing
All
in my
right.
youth.
So then, a little bit of a like, if at any point when I'm asking you about you or anything's happened, I get too personal, just tell me to bug off. I'm just a very curious person, which is why I love doing this show. But as you went through that, when you were doing this, did you pick up what I will call, these are not correct words, like mainstream certificates, like diplomas or GEDs or things like that? When you were a student, not in a classroom, did you do any of those things or just not at all?
So at the end, I got a diploma.
Okay.
I got a high school diploma. My mom wrote up a transcript based on what I had learned, and I used that. I never went to university myself. My sister did. I moved into, I guess, more of a trade school route of things,
Okay.
which is, and so it always worked perfectly fine. It was my diploma.
All right. No, that's the reason I'm asking, because like I think that it is more people are doing out of box, like not face-to-face school options than probably ever before. But it is one of the confusion points if you grow up in a system with where this is the path that you're offered, people are like, oh, but what do you do? Right. And I
Yes.
think there are a bunch of, I'm not an expert on this, but I think there are actually a bunch of different ways to do it. And it depends on, really helpfully, depends on where you live. So was this like a choice that your parents made when you were a kid that they did not want to put you in a school? Or was it like you were like, no, I never want to do that?
So, no, it was my mom to begin with. So my sister, I have an older sister, almost 5 years older. She was in public school, and there was no preschool in the town that we lived in. It was really small. So my mom started doing preschool with me. And I remember we would go out on walks and find flowers and look at bugs. And then it just kind of evolved into it worked really well. She enjoyed it. And then me staying home that year, my sister was upset that she had to go to school, wake up in the morning, get dressed, take lunch, go to school. So she wanted to stay home. And then it was both of us. It was both of us doing it.
All right. So yeah, you actually hit on like what a lot of people say when they talk about making the choices, the scheduling, so on and so forth. That's really interesting. And I know that I just put you in the spot to talk on behalf of your mom, but I appreciate you sharing that, because when you said you were from Alaska, like I was like, this could be any reason. Like there, you
Right.
know, like there may not have, it might have been a long day, like a long bus ride or anything. I don't even know. But so that was very good. All right. So we are talking about what is considered educational choice or school choice, right? This can be something that intermingles with people's like big belief categories. This can be a thing that people do that, right? So, but you and one of the things that I have started asking people when I talk about school choice, just putting it on the table, is whether or not there's any part of it that is a faith-based conversation, because that is one of the reasons that people choose either parochial schools, traditional in-house, or a homeschooling community. Was faith a reason at any point that you or your parents, as far as you know, made this decision?
No, and I think it was interesting because as a child, that was the kind of stereotype is that it was always that was the choice. And so I remember being very aware that that's what people assumed growing up,
Oh, okay.
and being like, N no, that's not why. I think maybe it kind of evolved into something like that a little bit, like once I got into the older years. My dad specifically didn't like some of the things that were being taught, but it wasn't. It really wasn't. My mom was kind of a hippie from San Francisco, and she just always did things a little different than, everybody that we grew up around. So I think it was just her really loving being a mom and wanting to explore these things. And then it just kind of not really intentionally those first couple years just kind of kept flowing into that. And then it was more my dad saying, no, actually now we don't want to put them in school. I want to keep them. And the sh it shifted. I think the intent shifted a little bit in those later years.
That is very interesting. So you have a bunch of different parts of that discussion. All right. So the reason I think this is the reason I asked about you and your schooling is that it's part of the story of how I think it impacts like how we are educated impacts how we feel about our children's education decisions. So like if you are a person who goes to boarding school, you think of, sending your kids to boarding school. And if you're a person who never went to boarding school, I mean, I never went to boarding school. It never even entered my mind. Like I didn't even think of it as an option. So that's the
Yes.
reason I did that.
Yes.
And I want to thank you for sharing all of those bits of information. Let's talk about now, we're going to shift and talk about the choice for your son. So since this was a shift, I know you shifted in the pandemic. Does that mean that before that he was an in-person, traditional, in the box school?
No, I always knew that I would unschool him. That was always a given. And I knew any kids that I had, that's what I would be doing. And so then when the lockdowns happened, it was this moment of, oh my gosh, thank goodness. Because I watched a lot of families scrambling at that point, reevaluating what their plan was. But we were
Yes.
already kind of in that flow of things.
Okay. So then what I'm curious about now is like, it was he just beginning his education journey at that point? Like, where were
Yeah.
you?
So he was 4 and a half when 4 and a half? Yeah, he was like almost 5 when the lockdowns first happened.
All
So
right.
we really hadn't
So.
started anything official.
All right, very good. So we talked about road schooling, which is what you're doing now. You knew that you were going to unschool him. Talk a little bit about what that means to you.
The road schooling part?
No, the unschooling part.
Okay, so really the unschooling is self-directed, so letting him choose how he was going to learn. So, of course, I still really value reading, writing, and arithmetic, but letting him have a choice on how that was going to play out in his life, how he was going to learn those things, and not being attached that it needed to happen in a certain way, and generally, in a general sense, from a textbook.
Okay. All right. Very, very interesting. Okay. So that's really interesting. Now, is this, were you already aware of unschooling like as an adult, or was it something that you researched, or how did you find these movements of schooling choices?
Okay, so the term unschooling was coined in the late 70s. So
Okay.
technically, it existed in the 80s when I was being unschooled. But it wasn't a term that people really used. So it was hitting my mid 20s, or sorry, my late 20s, really, and thinking, I want to have kids, kind of what is education, what's happening in education right now, that I kind of became more aware, oh, this is the term that we're using. This is what I lived
Okay.
through. But we didn't really call it homeschooling, was already fringe enough. People didn't really understand it in the mid 80s. And so just saying homeschool already puts you in a category. There was no, I'm glad that the term unschooling didn't exist because it was already too complicated, really. Kind of explain what we were doing. But then I realized, oh my gosh, there's a term. It's people are really using it now. There's awareness on what it means. That's exactly what I'm talking about because I never wanted him to learn through, I mean, if he chose a subject that required a textbook, great, we'll get it and we can go through that. But I'm not thinking of education in terms of the stack of textbooks, therefore, that you need to then test with like a standardized test.
Okay.
Being the result of that.
All right. Very, very good. Okay. So more, I'm going to talk directly to the audience here for a second, invite them into our conversation because this is something that a lot of people have questions about. And so Moira and I are talking about education choices for our families and for our kids. And I post a discussion question on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube for every single episode. If you go there right now, you'll find the one for this episode and you can join me and Moira and other listeners in the conversation. If by chance you're not already connected to the show on social media and you need those links, they're in the show notes too. All right. No, so back to the topic where we left off. You're a mom of a 4.5-year-old kid. This is, though, not the only shift that happens for you during lockdown and the pandemic. You also go through a career shift, I think, right?
Yes.
So what was going on if you, when you think back, this is always a tricky question because I'm asking you about mindset that happened a long time ago. So it's like, but it just, it's, I think it's helpful. What motivation was driving some of these changes for you?
Okay. So I was very clear when I kind of left those high school years that I always knew I was going to be an entrepreneur. I never wanted to have a boss, and I was very, very clear on that. So I got into a career that I loved and I was in for many, many years, service-based as a rolfer. So I worked with people, you know, day in, day out, in a few different cities across the US, because I would move periodically and rebuild. And then when we got to the time of having my son, I still loved the work. There were elements that I still loved about it. I love systems thinking. So as a role for what we're looking at is I'm looking at the human body and how the human body works as this beautiful, dynamic, living system, and addressing challenges that come up, pain, discomfort, things that come up through looking at the human body as a, through the lens of it being a living dynamic system. So when I was pregnant with my son and looking at where education was, I was using that same thinking when we look at just childhood development, because I'm fascinated with how children develop physically, because there's a lot of issues that we have as adults that stem from not understanding how our physical body works. But then also there's this beautiful system that plays out of how they learn how to push themselves up into seated position and crawl and learn how to walk. And I'm fascinated with that stuff. And then also just this fundamental belief that we are designed at our core to want to learn things, that it doesn't have to be dictated from the outside. Like, we don't have to tell an infant to want to learn how to walk. Like, you can't stop them from that. It's like built into them. You also can't, you don't have to remind them to learn the language. They're practicing it without any, you know, without any push for that. And so I stepped back and looked at, I think that the way we're thinking about education is kind of inherently kind of backwards, because I think that we're really designed at a very core level. And so being able to start talking about that. And so it was like shifting, because in my rolfing practice, I was working a lot with athletes, and I had been a bodybuilder. I had done a lot of kind of more athletic stuff, but I really was shifting now as motherhood. I was thinking of infancy. I wasn't thinking about bodybuilding. I was working a lot with runners. I'm not a runner, never have been a runner. And so I wanted to shift it more aligned with how I was spending my days. So it was a natural kind of evolution, but it was still built on kind of my previous career choice.
Absolutely. So we're going to back up just a second. I want to give you a chance to explain what rolfing is. I know you don't do this as a primary career anymore, but because we just went through that beautiful explanation of it, I have definitely heard of it. So I think that it is a form of sort of body work, but tell us what it is.
Yes. Okay. So a massage therapist will think about and work on muscle fibers. And if you go to a chiropractor, their focus is on the joints.
Yep.
As a rolfer, my focus was on the fascia and the connective tissue. So that includes your tendons, your ligaments. If you were to take out all of your muscle fibers, your organs, your bones, you have the shape of your body in the fascia and the connective tissue.
Do you use, when you were rolfing, did you use that like Graston, that like little wand that they use to break up that looks like it hurts a lot?
No, I used my knuckles, my elbow, my forearm. So Ida Rolf was the first person to look at fascia as the element of the body that we needed to pay attention to. So back in the 50s, she was saying, like, this is generally a part of the body that's disregarded. We need to focus on this. It doesn't have memory like muscle fibers have, but it is controlling so much of what's happening in the body. And then a lot of modalities have evolved out of her work. But
yeah, so myofascial release. I'm going to give a stab at telling people what fascia is. And when I get it wrong, because I'm not an expert, you can correct me. But I believe that fascia is on top of the muscle and under the skin. It's like the layer on the outside. Like, is that right?
So the way that we actually got hands-on and like learned about it is we had gummy worms and saran wrap. So the gummy worms are the muscle fibers. So okay. Muscle fibers do not touch a muscle fiber next to it. So if you take a gummy worm and you wrap it in saran wrap, That saran wrap is the fascia. And then you
Okay.
bundle all of those together and then you wrap it in more saran wrap. That's the fascia. And then
Oh,
you
so
bundle
it's
those more together.
not. So it's like all woven in throughout. Okay.
Exactly.
So
So,
I was wrong.
yes. Another way that I have explained it is in an orange, like the little fluid sacs or the
Yeah,
muscle
okay.
fiber, and then they're all bundled together in the segments. Those are bundled together in the orange. So that's
Yep,
the fascia.
okay.
So it's everywhere, but it doesn't have memory like muscle fiber does. And so that's where, on just a very base level, when you have like tension, say in your right shoulder, but it's coming from your left hip, that's because it's the same structure, really. It's just changed its shape in a different part
Yeah.
of the body, but it's pulling, it has the ability to pull stuff all over the body.
That's
So,
right. Which is
yes.
the reason that when you have shoulder pain, squats are your friend.
Yes. And there's so
Because what you're
many.
doing is like you're compensating for something, or you're a side sleeper.
Yes.
Anyway, off topic. Holy cow. Sorry, but thank you for that. So you were doing a very physically intensive service-based job. You become a mom. That process of becoming a parent is like changes the way like most of us think about everything from the food we put in our body to where we live and all of those things. So you shift as many people do. One of the common themes in the conversations I have is that we sometimes think when we're planning our lives when we're young that there are no shifts that will come, but there are many shifts. So it's normal. It doesn't mean we've done anything wrong. I think that you did a wonderful job of tying it together because sometimes when we make a shift, it looks like it's a right turn into like a field out of nowhere, but often there are similarities. And so you were applying, you're thinking about your work in Rolfing to education and your role, your new identity and role in your family. So, quick question about this, just without, you don't have to tell me all the ins and outs of your family and all the things, but were there other adults around making the decisions about schooling for your son with you? Like, were there other family members voicing opinions and telling you what they thought you should do?
No, and that was very intentional. I became a single mother by choice. So I very intentionally made the choice because I knew that I'm very opinionated when it comes to these choices, and I didn't fully trust my ability to choose someone that would be very aligned with all of that. And I was unwilling to compromise on a lot of these decisions. So I, yes, very intentionally became a single mother to avoid all of those challenges. So
Yeah,
I'm
because
sorry.
it is a thing that when you make I mean, when you make choices for your kids, whether it's like what you feed them or where you send them to school, sometimes strangers will tell you that they have thoughts about what you're doing. It's a great part of being a modern human being, by the way. All right, so this starts with lockdown. Where are you in Alaska at this point, or where are you when this starts?
No, I was in upstate New York. I was actually in Albany. So I was right
Okay.
in the capital.
Very good. So you're in Albany. You go through these changes. You've got this Rolfing practice, so on and so forth. Then we hit lockdown, right? And you're making
Yes.
these education choices. You are aware and committed to unschooling already. When and how does this shift to road schooling?
So I decided that I was not happy with our current location, but I didn't quite know where I was meant to settle. There's lots of options, and I knew I could build my practice. At the time, I was thinking I would still build up my Rolfing practice. So I knew that I could do that kind of anywhere, and I didn't have a lot of requirements. I don't have extended family really around, so I didn't have a pull to any specific location, and I absolutely did not feel held to New York. I've spent a lot of the last 20 years in and out of New York, but it w didn't really hold me at all. And so then it was like, well, where do I choose? And I see upsides and downsides to lots of different locations. And then I thought, when I went back to my 20s, I did a lot of traveling in Europe. I did the whole hitch backpack across Europe and stay in hostels, and I loved that, and I thought I would live on the road at that time for a long time. So then it just kind of all just made sense. Let's just travel around this country. It's so massive. I haven't done a lot of traveling here. I'd always dreamed of going down the East Coast to Florida, in like a motorhome. And then my son really vibed with it really well. It was so smooth, and as soon as we hit the road, I just felt happier. I
Okay.
just was like, this This is like my home place. I feel at my best when we're exploring new places. And again, if he didn't work well with it, I probably, I wouldn't have followed along with it, but he loved it. We got to the one moment that I remember is him trying barbecue in North Carolina. And we went to this all you can eat barbecue place owned by a family. They loved that he was from New York and they like brought him all these things to try. He's very open with trying food. So he loved it. And it just really captured this moment of this is where I feel like I'm at my best, where we're meeting new people, learning about different ways that people live. This is really what I'm meant to be doing. I knew this 10 years ago. I just was told, well, you're supposed to settle down and you're supposed to. And I fought so many of those shoulds in generally in my life, that I think I was like, well, fine, I'll give in to this one. And then I was like, no, this one doesn't actually fit me either.
Yeah, so should can be, it's not always, this is not like a rule of nature, but should can be a clue that the conversation we're having with ourselves, it has components from someplace else. Like, so whenever you feel like you should do something, it can be a societal expectation, a familial expectation, and just fill them all in. You might be outside of that. And that's not always necessarily a absolute sign that we don't want to do that. But I think that what you're talking about, and I'll put my own words on it, you can tell me if I get them wrong, is that it does give you the chance to ask yourself, oh, is this actually something that works for me? Like, is this
Yes.
working towards what I want to do? So we're talking, because we're talking about school, and your son is quite young at this point, but so unschooling and road schooling, are you using any sort of curriculum or benchmarks as you go through this, like at all, or are you making it your own?
So no, not really. I mean, we're learning constantly. But I'm not paying attention to what I'm told the benchmarks are supposed to be. That's not
Okay.
how my life unfolded. And I think that it doesn't line up with a lot of people. So if some things happen sooner, some things happened later. And so no, I generally try to push those aside
Okay.
and not pay them any mind.
All right. I appreciate, I'm glad I asked, and I appreciate you doing this. So we would call this completely self-led, just wherever the interest takes you.
Yes, and I would also this references back like the development piece because I felt very strongly. I watched it happen the moment he was born. We start measuring them against all the other kids that are born at that time. It's not measured against like when we talk about the percentiles, it's not against this like objective number. It changes depending on what the other kids are going through at that same time. And that's not something that I'm willing to gauge his success or failure against. It's who is he, right? And so I don't care about when he learns to walk. I don't care about when he learned to crawl, potty training, all of that stuff. It will happen. I'm not going to, rush any of it. I'm going to pay attention to who he is. And, and he was riding a bike at 3 years old, but he didn't walk until he was 16 months or so. And so, those early benchmarks is really where I was like, nope, I don't believe in any of this. And of course, we want to pay attention to, like, in a way, certain benchmarks, like making eye contact or like
I was going to
certain
say,
things. So there are elements, but for a majority of things, all we get hung up, in my opinion, on all of these little pieces. It does not matter, if I was potty trained when I was 9 months old or when I was 15 months old. When I'm 30, it's irrelevant. So I'm not going to get caught up on that, in his early years or his early months, really.
So to clarify that for people, we're not talking about benchmarks that are signifying that something needs intervention. So there are benchmarks we use, not we. This is like the royal we, like people who are specialists, to indicate that something is really, really wrong. But you're talking about like guideline benchmarks. So he's normally progressing, and there's no cause for concern. But like the benchmarks that are like, you need to read by the first day of first grade.
Yes.
You like the walking one and the potty training one for the kids in my house. It's like those can drive you crazy. And I remember somebody saying to me a long time ago, a million years ago, they're like, I promise you, There's a very, they're going, oh, and sleeping through the night. I promise you, they will sleep through the night before they move away to college. Like, it's like, this is not going to last forever. But, so the benchmarks can drive you crazy. They can drive
Yes.
you crazy. And they usually do come in ranges. I have, my kids spent a lot of time in utero reading the books about when they were supposed to do it. So they tended to do things right. It was low stress for me. They
Yep,
tended to
yep.
do things right, they roll over, lose their teeth, so on and so forth. But I've also been on the other side where something throws it off, and the professionals are like, "Don't ever look at this chart because you're not on it."
Right.
Like this is, so like even in the very regimented world, like there are times where they're like, "Nope, this is not for you."
Yes.
So very, I think that that's a good discussion to have, and I appreciate you being honest about it. All right. So one of the discussion points that I've heard over the years, my kids are out of school, like so I'm no longer in this. But one of the things that I've heard throughout the years when people are talking about in-person school to homeschooling and other options is the thing about socializing and community for the kids, right? So I wanted to talk a little bit about that. And this is this idea that when you go to an age-based in-person school, that your kids will then, they're organized into groups by age, right? And they all have the school in common. And so that becomes a community for them, right? So then homeschooling came up with, or maybe they always had it, I'm not an expert, like the pods and the homeschooling communities, right? And they would do those kind of things. When you're on the road, you are in a different place. You're moving around. Do you guys, what are you guys thinking about that? Like, how are you thinking about that and having it? Or is he too young that it's not really an issue?
So no, it's definitely something that we talk about frequently. So there are thousands of families road schooling now. I mean, if you look at the world, there's millions of families living nomadically all over the world, and there are hubs, what are called hubs, all over. So you can go to
Oh,
Egypt.
interesting.
You can go to Egypt and find a hub for a few weeks, and you can converge, and there can be 20 kids from 5 to 16 for weeks. I mean, from the Dominican Republic to Australia here in the US. So these things are popping up everywhere because there's a need for it. I actually just watched a video of a group of high schoolers that the families got together and put on a prom at an old castle in the south of France, and there were like 30 teenagers that came and they put on their own prom. So they would still have that experience. So every and think honestly, this is why I'm on Facebook. There's lots of homeschool groups in all the towns and cities that we go to, so I'm always posting. And generally, what I find in those groups are other people that are always also on the road. So we've made friends kind of all over the country. And so, like for Christmas, as an example, I was trying to decide what we wanted to do for Christmas. We drove from Charleston, South Carolina, all the way to Lexington, Kentucky, to stay with friends that we had made while we passed through Kentucky the year before. And we got to spend a couple weeks there. The kids got to play for the 2 weeks, and then we headed back to Charleston. So sometimes it means, that extra driving. That was definitely not a short drive, but being able to prioritize coming back to the areas and reconvening with the families that we've met. And honestly, I feel like when we've lived in one place, even when we have neighbors a few, maybe just like a few miles down the road, we don't see them that frequently either.
Yeah.
Like we see them, I feel like sometimes more frequently because it's like, well, we're in town for 3 weeks. We're going to pass by. We're going to facilitate being able to spend a lot of time together. Where I feel like sometimes when they're in our backyard, it's easy to forget and months go by that you don't make that possible. So that's a big thing. It's part of why we came up to the Northeast for the summer because there's a lot, we have a lot of friends in Southern Vermont and in upstate New York. So
Very
we
nice.
cycle back.
I actually knew somebody many, many years ago who had more money than most people and a couple kids, and their kids were in traditional school, but they took a couple of years off and did their version of homeschooling traveling. And it was like, and I was nominating myself to be adopted by this family because they were like, all right, so we're going to do, their kids are older, that we're going to do Russian literature. Actually, they weren't, I forget. We're going to do like Russian literature, and then we're going to like go to Russia for 3 weeks. And I was like, sign me up for this. I will always remember that. Like, I have no idea how it went, but I was like, that is amazing. but so it's a very interesting idea. I could actually probably ask you questions and talk to you about this all day long. I'm going to limit myself to one more question, which is about looking forward to the future. And so this is a really vague and ambiguous thing, but what do you have any idea or any thoughts, or how will you figure out how long you want to continue doing this, or when and if you might say, you know what, now is the time, we're going to root in one spot for a while?
So really the number one thing is if my son, his name's London, London comes to me and says, I'm done with this, mom. I really want to have a more permanent home base and not go anywhere. And when that happens, I'm hoping that we then say, great, because there's this place that we really think that we would love to live permanently because we've seen so many places, and that we go to that place and settle in. Right now, there's a few top contenders. But honestly, the list keeps getting longer, not shorter. So that would be the number one thing when he says, you know, I'm done with this. And right now he's pushing 10. So talking to different families, you know, sometimes it happens around now, sometimes it happens more when they get into those kind of early teen years.
I was wondering if there were benchmarks like that, 'cause like the adolescent years is when, you know, traditionally kids, youngsters will begin to not want to hang out with mom quite so much.
Yes. And so I'm going to be open to when that happens. And then, you know, we can go from there. But our list keeps getting longer. We do want to go out over to Southeast Asia. London really wants to go to Japan. I'd like to spend some time in like Central and Eastern Europe for a bit of time. So we have several places that we want to pack in, but I feel like probably another couple years. I feel like once he gets closer to that 12, 13, he might go, Ma, I'm done with this.
Maybe. Yeah. But who knows? I think this has been a really interesting conversation. One of the things that's different in my conversation with you than the other conversations I've had so far with people who have made schooling decisions like this is that you had a homeschool experience or an unschool experience, whatever words we want to use, yourself. And then you chose a path along that line. So I think that's really interesting. I appreciate you sharing so much of your personal story. In a second, we're going to do my final fun questions, but I want to give you a chance to talk about, because people are probably curious, right? So I always ask the people who are on the show to share what they're doing. But in conversations like this, where you're nomadic, you're a mom, you're doing things, people are probably very curious what you do for your business and while you're on the road and doing these things. So tell us what you do and how you want people to connect and follow you online.
Yes. So it's the same lines of that systems thinking. We are all these living dynamic systems. So I help entrepreneurs with their branding using human design, which is it pulls from a lot of different ancient kind of understandings of our energy and how it flows. And I also help families, especially families that didn't expect to homeschool, that are now, you know, wanting to have their kids at home and are struggling with that transition from the typical school model that they probably had growing up into something different. But we can all hear that people are different from us, but it's really hard to understand what that means in day-to-day life.
Yeah.
Sometimes, and a lot of times, our kids are very different from us and we can see that they're different from us, but understanding how to meet them in that place can be very challenging. So I both help families with that shift and entrepreneurs that are wanting to have businesses from a more authentically who they are place. And the foundation of that is human design. And so one thing that I offer people is to give them a free kind of blueprint of a very general view of how their energy works. And if it resonates, amazing, we can continue on and do more work. If not, you know, it can be a fascinating thing to hear. But that is where I put all of my energy now, because I think that there's this one kind of box that we're all told is how we're supposed to live. And it's this 9-to-5 white picket fence, 2-car garage kind of thing. And that can work for some people beautifully, but there's a lot of people that are, you know, and we're at a time in our society where we have the flexibility, being able to do Zooms like this, being able to be more flexible. And so being able to explore those things, I find very fascinating. And I love helping people through that process.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So human design is super fun. Human design. And you have a special offer for the audience, which is a full human design reading, because it's one of those things that's just like anything else. You can get like the quick free report by plopping in your email online, or you can do a full reading. And so you have a full reading, which is 60 to 75 minutes, where you do a deep dive with people. The value of this product is usually over $200, $222, I think you told me before we started. And you have a coupon for $50 off for the people in the audience. You go to moiramills.com and put in the code imperfect50. And then you will, if you do that, you will hear from Moira. The easiest way for people who are listening and watching the show to get these links for all these offers is to be a subscriber to the Imperfect Adulting email community. It's fun, I promise. But then these links come straight into your email box and you can just click on them. You don't have to scramble for a piece of paper or rewind and try and write it down. It's a good thing. It's a very, very good thing. That is the easiest thing. I recommend it for everybody. Moira, thank you so much for that very generous offer. That is very, very good. Are you ready for the final fun questions?
Yes, bring it on.
All right. These are supposed to be rapid fire, but I can tell you that today in our interview, I have been very verbose and extra chatty. So we'll see how we do, just for fun. All right. If you find yourself in a situation where you realize you're overstimulated, what is something that you yourself might do to try and relax and unwind?
Oh, I need to go out for a walk.
Okay.
For sure. I need a very quiet, peaceful, not through a city. I need some quiet.
Like nature.
I need nature.
Nature. All right. Very good. When you have a question today in 2025, I've been asking this question because I'm so curious about how other people are doing this. So when you have a question about something you want to know in 2025, where are you today going for answers? Is it like Google? Are you using an AI tool? Are you going to YouTube? Are you going to the library and hitting the card catalog? That would be old school. Calling a friend. What is your solution these days?
I tell you what, I have been fascinated with AI and I have been exploring how it is. So definitely I would say AI and TikTok. I go to TikTok I just put in my little question. And what I love is I can get just some quick opinions on it. I can watch, 5, 10, 15 of those opinions, and then I can move forward with my research. I love those two.
So it's interesting because they are... I think everybody is doing it. And also I've heard people who have confessed that they are using TikTok as a first line research tool, specifically for like, this is what's happening in my life. And then there's pushback from people who are like, don't do your research on TikTok. It's so funny how we get these responses from people. I don't actually have an opinion. I'm just observing the scenario. All right. So do you subscribe as a person to any of these like pay for information type things, like an online magazine, a newspaper subscription, Substack, stuff like that? Are you a person who's signing up and paying for things behind the paywall?
So I do when it comes to very specific business tools.
Okay.
And generally, I have to really talk myself into it. So the ones that I choose are very, very necessary and very helpful. But in general, just for kind of my life, no, I don't think that I do. I think that I really utilize the free tools out there. I want to hear like lots of different opinions on something.
Yeah. No, that question is inspired by every time YouTube asks me to subscribe to YouTube Premium. And I'm like, I will listen to 3 seconds of the ad and hit skip, I don't know.
Agreed.
If it's just me being cheap or like what, but I asked my kids, I was like, are people paying for this? Like who is doing it? And people are, I'm sure people are, but I'm just curious about it. All right. That's it. Moira Mills, this has been a wonderful conversation. I want to thank you for being a great guest today on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself. Head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.